Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this is our 100th episode.
So over 2 years.
Yes.
Of The Weekly.
Over 2 years. And it was through the lockdown. It was rough getting episodes out. Yeah, we were semi-weekly for a while there.
I say, oh yeah, it was rough. As someone who only has to show up, talk a bunch of bullshit for half an hour, and then that's it, right?
Yeah. But that was good that your work, though, doesn't care about your
health. Yeah. There's no telework, so I can still pop up and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were able to get back to physically meeting a lot sooner than a lot of people. So that was good. But that we cranked out 100. So yeah, and it's been kind of up and down. So if you have been listening for any portion of this 100 episodes, let us know in the comments, like, if there's something we used to do that you miss or something that we do now that you hate.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Anything we can do to kind of improve things, because we're not learning through repetition at all.
I think you just learned that we're not learning.
So we kind of need some guidance here. But this brings us. So in honor of our 100th episode, I thought I would start off with the top 100 tabletop RPG list.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So,
99 D&Ds, right? All right.
I know you put one together too. So what's your 100? What do you want to start with? No, okay. Well, anyhow, we'll just go with mine then.
Sure.
So 100 would be Pokemon Yellow. It's a pretty good one.
Oh, shit.
And 99, Secret of Mana, I have. 98, Final Fantasy VI. There's fantasy genre. Kind of makes sense.
Tabletop RPG.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Number one is Chrono Trigger, and that wasn't a tabletop list. Actually, as part of even thinking about that, I did a little looking online, and it's really wild how diverse people's lists, even like top 25. It's like, what's your top 10, top 25 tabletop RPGs? Okay. Based on what people have been exposed to, there's no consistency.
Well, It's kind of like with anything, right? Mm. And this might be brought up from, like, I saw a top 15 or top 12 list of games that aren't D&D recently. I think it was either on Polygon or Dicebreaker or something like that. And a lot of people said, wow, this list is surprising, only because Pathfinder didn't get the number one slot, right? Like, these are actually games that are not D&D, like, adjacent. So that's a pretty decent list. And there was some good stuff on there. But just, like, different people have different tastes. Those tastes are modified by what you've been exposed to and know about.
Yeah.
So yeah, a top list of anything as niche as tabletop role-playing games is going to vary widely based on who's put it together, just by what they like and what they've been exposed to.
Yeah.
Like, you can try and be quasi-objective, right? Mm-hmm. But best, I mean, that's vague.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So,
and it's kind of like your experience is what you've enjoyed, what your group has enjoyed, or what the local game shop stocks, you know? Like, if the owner is into something, you're never going to, oh, there's a Pathfinder, you know, depending on their biases. And I think it's also changing because the internet is like a new, like, you know, local game store. Like, it's a way to discover games, and it's also a way to play now too. So you can have a game group that you don't meet physically, and they have their own opinions. So I was really surprised by that diversity, and just like, yeah, so when we're talking about tabletop, everyone's coming from a really different point of view. And so I think that's where you get a lot of conflicting opinions. I've never experienced that, because you've been spared, you've been lucky, you know, have a good group or have a terrible group. Similarity of experiences. And I guess that's why, you know, emphasis on player expectations and like session zeros is important, because if you've got people, you know, and especially because we're all from different parts of the world trying to put game groups together as like expats, that you do have to say, so what do you actually know of this, and what do you like?
So no, I think that's a good point. And something that comes up a lot, at least in the kind of the social media discussions that I'm part of, it seems like, oh, we're talking about this again. Or like, why do we keep having the same discussions or arguments, or why do the same points keep coming up? And it's kind of like exactly what you said. There's no kind of shared language, but people are coming at this from so many different points of entry and different places of experience that there's not like a 101, right? We're not all past this point. And so these discussions about like session zero and player expectations have to keep happening, just because new people are coming in, or new people, or people are coming to like a new style of game, even if they've already kind of experienced one. And so we just kind of have to keep having these.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a while. And I think, you know, 5e has given everybody like a
thing to hate on.
Yeah, a thing to hate on. So, you know, think either that's what they want to do or that's what they don't want to do.
Right.
So it's giving, you know, some kind of touchstone or some kind of way to say, okay, this is what I want out of the experience or not. But I think even within the 5e community, there's still people having very different experiences because yeah, there's so much homebrew. There's, you know, people playing pre-written stuff, people doing homebrew and world building and original races that with Tasha that added the whole, like make your own civilization and culture and communities. And so now it's just all up for grabs.
I think D&D is its own kind of touchstone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, I would argue, it's not fantasy TTRPG anymore. It's D&D style fantasy, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of become its own thing, which does give people, for better or worse, and you know, I don't like it, does give people a starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the Kleenex or Thermos of TTRPGs, and don't necessarily mean that negative, just I think D&D language is close as we have to like a lingua franca for the tabletop space just because of how ubiquitous and widely available that game is. And it does at least give us a starting point to say, okay, what have you played D&D before? Yes, okay, well, it's like D&D but, it's like D&D plus, like starting with there, you know, that point and then saying, it's different in these ways, either mechanically or fictionally, is helpful.
Mm-hmm. So, that's true. It at least gives a basis. And when you're explaining, you know, like new systems or OSR, so it's like this. It's like this in D&D. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like D&D, but you roll 2d6 instead of a d20 or whatever.
Yeah. So I think what tabletop needs is a framework.
Okay.
To build things off of.
Okay.
And I think WizKids is going to provide this for us.
Ooh, I'm excited.
So WizKids is going to start producing frameworks. So that's their on-the-sprue miniatures. And that's very different from what they've been doing. Mm. So WizKids, if you aren't familiar with them, the kind of pre-painted, they did HeroClix and are the pre-painted miniatures that D&D has been using for a long time. Every time they release a new setting, they'll do a set, and like they do blind boxes and things.
Not a fan, but
so collectible pre-painted miniatures. But now they're going to enter into the kind of more customizable on the sprue, like cutting off the little pieces, putting the heads on the bodies and the arms on the torsos type miniatures. And it's going to be branded Dungeons and Dragons, but they're saying that it's system agnostic. Like these are going to be generic fantasy. They're not going to be specifically like named characters or anything famous from Forgotten Realms, but they will be like the fantasy monsters and things you're kind of expecting. So you could use them for other systems, but it's going to have D&D all over
it. And I wonder, okay, can't escape the fact that D&D is the most popular and wide-known tabletop RPG and just... new game, take a shot whenever I mention something along those lines. You'll be drunk in no time, right? But, okay, I do know from looking at other stuff or doing the old Fantastic Fate monster resources, there are some monster names, I believe like Carrion Crawler or Beholder, that either WotC or Hasbro owns.
Oh, wow.
Right? Uh-huh. Like, unless you go through the DM's Guild, you don't get to use those names or you run the risk of having legal come after you. So I wonder... if WizKids making these D&D branded frameworks, right? They've partnered with Hasbro and D&D. It probably allows them to make Beholder and Carrion Crawler on the frame miniatures, which I doubt they would be able to do without licensing or partnering with D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think it's kind of like two things here, right?
Yeah.
D&D is super popular. We know these are going to be used for D&D, so let's just do it.
Yeah.
And this allows us to make owlbears or whatever.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, that's a good point. And we heard like about a year ago that there was some kind of licensing discussion and negotiation. So that may have been what this was part of. Yeah, because when we said, well, okay, so if they lose WizKids support, then D&D may be trying to sell itself. But yeah, that ended up not being true. And this was the result of them renegotiating, is they're, you know, probably allowing them to make much more diverse kits. So together with these on the sprue miniatures called their Frameworks series, they're also releasing Prismatic Paint. So that this is in cooperation with, it's going to be D&D branded, but it's in cooperation with Vallejo.
Oh,
and
nice.
They're going to do, I think initially it's going to be 30 colors.
Okay.
Some of them are like pre-existing Vallejo colors, and some of them are specifically for the miniatures they're releasing. And they're going to have, you know, what, owlbear brown or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. When you said specifically for the miniature, I'm like, how does that work? Oh, GW style trademark names.
Yeah, so like they're going to
Bear Brown.
Put those names all over. And they're going to be, so they're saying they're saying pots with dropper lids. So.
Which are like the Vallejo ones.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think they're good. So basically bottles that they would, they're calling them pots, but I think it's just going
to
be bottles.
Which are great. Mm-hmm. Until they start to dry out, and then you can't pry them open to put a, like a little ball bearing or something.
Right.
Which is what's happened to all my 5-year old paints. Yeah,
yeah, those are fun to deal with. But so this is very heavily targeted at beginners, mm-hmm. and trying to like make it less intimidating and bring people into the hobby. It might have the unintended consequence of people then going beyond this hobby into like miniature wargaming or into more sophisticated. And it's an odd timing as well, because as 3D miniatures, I think the most supported free models out there are fantasy models for
D&D.
So if you have a 3D printer, you know, you probably are already doing this, or already trying to do this. And so maybe that would sell the paints, but it's a kind of a late move to kind of be saying, let's get into building miniatures for your game, because if you've had any inclination to do that, somebody in your group is already probably printing out miniatures on
maybe. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. I'm probably being colored by the fact that I only recently started borrowing or using your 3D printer to print the War Machine or War Master stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've signed up for a couple sites to look at 3D STL files, and by far it's fantasy 28 millimeter or whatever fantasy miniatures.
Right.
So my feeling is it does seem kind of late.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think 3D printers are ubiquitous or as ubiquitous to make this a bad move, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's still how many game groups out there or how many people out there who are buying miniatures because they either can't or don't want to 3D print their own stuff, and then they're limited to things other people. Well, I mean, they're still limited to whatever WizKids puts out with these frameworks, but I don't necessarily think on the sprue plastic miniatures is a bad move, rather than going only STL files or something.
Right.
And like you said, them also producing paints. If people do then go, hey, I'm going to slide over into war games, you still got paints. I think people are probably either solidly one or the other or already both.
Right.
Like, I don't really think like WizKids frameworks are going to scoot people over to GW and Warhammer 40,000. Holy shit, that's expensive.
I
would be interested to know the price point
for these things. Yeah, they don't say. They're going to be out this year, so we will find out. And they're going to do waves every 5 months, so we're going to get like new sets. So they're going to do a couple of starter sets, and if you buy both starter sets, you'll have every paint that they've released, and then you'll have a good foundation of maybe the original wave of miniatures they're going to do. And they're saying things like a beholder and a halfling bard and like just some kind of classic default things to get you started. But it does seem if they're going to market to their pre-existing buying pre-painted, you know, blind box figures, I think that is a logical next step to try to get those people more involved. And because you know, it's something that you made, you have more of a connection to it, and you want to keep building on it instead of just something that a Chinese factory painted for you that you tore out of a bag.
Well, I'm sure people are painting those already. So
yeah, that's true. Those are definitely getting repainted as well. But I'm curious if this will cannibalize at all some of their business of the pre-painted. I mean, they do have that, you know, it's a collectible idea and you don't know what you're getting, so you're getting a lot of doubles. So maybe that model is pretty strong and this won't have any effect, but you are the same company offering, you can get one that you can paint yourself completely or one that somebody's kind of clumsily painted in a factory. Which do you choose?
If you were going on only paint job, I'd agree with you. I would expect them to do something like WotC does with magic and kind of go, hey, you can only get Jarl Frostbeard, Frost Giant King, in our pre-painted set with the blind box. You can get these other ones on the frameworks, right?
So that's true, yeah.
I think that's also going to be a factor. Like people who want these sort of what are probably going to become exclusive figures or enjoy that collectible nature – maybe get some frameworks, but they're still going to be going for the pre-painted stuff just for that collectible and exclusive nature. Whereas people who are buying the miniatures to repaint or use are going to go, great, now I don't have to gamble with my money. I can buy exactly what I want, or won't have to go to third-party sources to buy open boxes. Right. So I think this is kind of a smart move for yeah. those kids.
That's a good point. They also talk about releasing what they're calling fat packs, which are going to be multiple sprue larger models. So, you know, demons and yeah. you know, dragons and things, I'm sure, are going to be multiple sprues. So that's going to, you know, make the – yeah, I am curious because WizKids stuff is not – really cheap for right. what you're getting, so it may be kind of expensive. And if they're looking at the market, they may put themselves somewhere in between, you know, Games Workshop and like Mantic or something. So that could be kind of pricey.
Well, I was going to say, if they're factoring Games Workshop prices into their calculations, their stuff's going to be ridiculously expensive. Oh, this is what people are paying. Oh.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah, so it's going to open up. I mean, then they have the option of doing like painting tutorials mm-hmm. and things. There's a lot more content that then they can generate around these. So we'll see how they approach this hobby and how engaged people are with this. And the fact that they're not aiming at professionals, they're saying strictly beginners and making it very simple. It's going to turn some people off, but yeah, we'll see. But it's Vallejo paint, so right. you know, people may buy those.
And I kind of think it's like a poor craftsman who blames their tools. If you look at something and go, oh, this is for beginners, I'm not going to use it. Well, then you're not being creative enough,
yeah,
right?
True. You know, that's true.
So as someone who's just kind of started painting miniatures again and hasn't in a couple weeks because no time, but again, I'd be curious to know what the price of their prismatic paints are mm-hmm, because. Mm-hmm. The contrast paints that GW put out look pretty good and are kind of doing stuff. I'd like to do them on 28 millimeter because mm-hmm. 10 millimeter figures, holy crap. Like you're just looking at, yep, that's a blob of color. Okay. But
could be a face.
Yep. GW paints are ridiculously expensive, mm-hmm. like prohibitively expensive, yeah, yeah. where I'm probably going to start picking up more Vallejo paints just to replace the ones that are mm-hmm. dead.
Right.
So if I see prismatic paints, mm-hmm. I'd want to price them
yeah.
to see like how competitive
they've
are.
Already done for a couple of other, like they've rebranded. There's Infinity paint sets yep, that yep. Vallejo does. So it's probably going to be the same kind of price point. Well, depending though, if they're changing the bottle at all or changing, if the packaging is a little more elaborate, it may be a little more expensive, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they actually do. Another D&D development that I'm wondering if this is connected to news we've talked about previously is in the future, no Unearthed Arcana is going to appear digitally for free on D&D Beyond. And I'm
for free or just kind or, of at
for,
all?
Well, I guess it's not for free, but right. they post it okay. there. That's right. It's so everything will be archived starting August 12th. Whoa. Which is yesterday. So, just basically saying, because it was their playtest model, yep, yep. and so we're putting things out there. And I wonder if they were realizing they're just getting too much bad press or too much controversy was being generated by stuff that's not published material. They're okay. just kind of experimenting with it because, you know, they deleted the subclasses from the Strixhaven mm. setting and people are just kind of getting frustrated with, okay, is this in or out? And the feedback from the playtest groups is informing that, but then also the internet is right. responding to, like, you know, just having trouble with some of the things and maybe some of the kind of leftovers from previous right. versions of D&D and stuff.
The thing I saw that was official from, you know, D&D Beyond was it was too much time and energy or too prohibitive to get it onto D&D like as quickly as they kind of needed to keep it relevant. And if it's something that's going to change a lot, which okay, true or not, mm-hmm. I do understand the point, right?
Yeah.
As someone who kind of has to produce content for work, it's like getting it out in lots of formats simultaneously is a lot of work, mm-hmm. especially if you got to keep cranking it out like every month or
yeah,
two.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Yeah, I wonder what is the real reason. And maybe a combination of the two. Maybe. It's just like they don't want the bad press with people being unhappy with stuff showing up. And also then it frees up their employees to do.
But if like, if Unearthed Arcana, not that I really looked at it, if it's branded as playtest, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is our our not homebrew, but this is our think tank that you kind of get to play with and give ideas. I can't understand, apart from people being internet trolls, why you're mad about something not working or being some part, right? It's like, this is, you're getting access to like the free beta test of mm-hmm, stuff, mm-hmm. whatever. Play it. Provide your feedback.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. Instead of seeing it as like, a, wow, the technology is allowing us to do this. This is a great benefit. I'm more engaged with, you know, the bleeding edge of 5e. Yeah, they're just complaining. I don't think I like
You didn't include my subclass. Oh, yeah, who cares?
Right. Wow. I was so looking forward to it. Yeah, so that's a funny development. I'm starting to just continually, and because more recently I've been reporting about these bigger companies, I think we're going to focus on indie developers and things, because it's so amazing the incompetence of these larger companies. They've been doing this for decades, and they're still like, whoa.
I think the charitable answer is because larger companies have all this bureaucratic stuff they got to go through, right, and they just can't be as agile as the smaller independent. Yeah.
And there are like people that are literally new to the job within the company that didn't rise by merit, but rose by, you know, default or whatever, you know, just like they failed upwards into a position.
I thought that was a standard. Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm really surprised by that. And that brings us to another large company that is about to make a big mistake.
Oh,
so Warhammer Plus is 2 weeks away.
Ooh, I didn't realize that.
The service is launching. So this is pretty much the biggest thing Warhammer has ever done as far as like a non-physical presence, you know, for their hobby. And so details about what's actually on this thing have now emerged.
Oh, they've actually emerged.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So now we know. Yeah, fine. They've been holding this off and holding this off, kind of tempting people and teasing. And it's odd. It doesn't seem possible that they're going to be able to pay for that. The subscriptions are going to be able to pay for this, and how they're approaching things seems to be kind of sabotaging, because they've been very greedy previously with their apps. Okay. So they've developed army kind of list builder apps for both Age of Sigmar and 40K. And they charge you a monthly fee for those. Okay. And what they're going to do is roll that all into this service that actually costs less than the previous two subscriptions combined. So you're getting all of that for free already. So already they're losing all of those subscribers to those apps, which may not have been that many, actually. Right. People may have just preferred physical because the apps don't work well. They're not great at app development. And so they're developing an app to put everything under. So those two subscriptions are going to be under this, as well as a digital vault of books and magazines. So there's specific apps as well as a website. So until they get everything out on every platform, because they're basically going to do, you know, iPhones, Android, and Amazon Fire as their first rollout for the apps, and then try to fill in everywhere that's kind of missing. And then the website is going to kind of cover what they haven't done yet. And so, I don't know.
Well, the big thing
that they, you know, originally were claiming that they're starting this for is the animation.
Right.
So the kind of bonus add-in stuff is going to be an archive of, like, you know, digitally existing, I think it's like the previous year of White Dwarf.
Okay.
And then some Black Library offerings. And the crown jewel of this, and kind of the reason that they started to promote this, is the animation.
Right.
But they're not saying the length of these animations, the schedule of these animations. They're just starting with a few. And it's fine when a fan art single person producing CG animation produces a minute every 3 months and it looks amazing and the whole internet goes, oh my God, that was great. I can't wait for more. But if a company, who knows, they should be putting teams, or there should be editors and all kinds of people involved in developing these animations. They shouldn't just leave it to a single creator now. Mm. And we're going to need more, you know, we're going to need more than a minute. We're not going to pay a subscription for, maybe in 3 months, I'll get one more minute of this amazing animation.
Well, you're right about the animation being kind of like the flagship thing they were touting for the subscription. I wonder if, I don't know if they're shifting everyone over, but if you already have subscribers to either or both of the army builders.
Mm-hmm.
And if you already are a White Dwarf subscriber,
right.
Like the lower price point for the subscription, that might be enough.
That would push people to say,
I'll subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the animation was supposed to be like the thing you subscribe to Warhammer Plus for.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've quietly shifted gears to
the
animation. We're not saying it, but the animation is going to be like the additional stuff, where the main reason we want you to subscribe is the Army Builder and the White Dwarf Black Library collection.
Right.
And then once we kind of get our ducks in a row for the animation thing, because it doesn't sound like they've done that, then that can kind of become the flagship.
Oh, that's, yeah, that might be that they're kind of front loading it with stuff that, yeah, you're already paying for and you would be actually getting for less. Yeah, right. That's a good point, because they are kind of like asking you to roll over your account. Right. So they probably have this number, this known quantity of subscribers. And if we can get most of them funneled into this payment, then that's a good start.
Yeah, that's a good start. And they'll at least kind of like start paying for stuff. Yeah.
Right. And the other thing, there is a physical component to this as well. So if you subscribe for a year, you get early access to the free miniature. There's a 40K or an Age of Sigmar miniature exclusive to the subscription service, so a Warhammer Plus. And so it just depending on like how you would value that, that's definitely worth a year. The way they price things, that's worth a year of the subscription by itself. You don't get it if you pay monthly until your 9th month, I think, but you get it within the first 3 months if you let them bill you annually. Right. And then you
even if at $10 a month, $120, yeah, that's about the cost of a GW mini, yeah, especially an exclusive one. Yeah,
right. Yeah. So the pricing so far that they have announced is about £5 British. So I'm not sure they do change.
Like $750.
Yeah, probably about $750, but I don't think they convert it.
Right.
It's going to be a little bit different, and hopefully, especially with the apps, the Japanese price is pretty low. So hopefully they don't boost that. They have been kind of bailing on Japan recently, so the pricing has gone out of control. Mm. But so you've got the Age of Sigmar app. You've got the Warhammer Vault, which is giving you the magazine issues, classic codexes, so maybe things that are out of print. They're going to take the lore sections, not the rules, but the lore sections from previous codexes and give you digital access to those, as well as the last year's entire catalog of White Dwarf. Huh. And so 25th of August is when this is all starting. And the two exclusive miniatures are the Vindicari Assassin or the Auric Megaboss, which are pretty centerpiece kind of elaborate models and interesting sculpts. But I don't know if people are going to sign up just for that. I'm sure
some people will, but I don't know.
Yeah, some people to resell things may actually do that. So yeah, it's an odd thing. And they're also going to do a series of lore videos and painting tutorials, which is going to be part of this vault. They already offer, you know, their painting tutorials free on YouTube. So those are obviously going to leave and go behind this thing. And they're going to be competing with their lore videos. I mean, they make the lore, but the producers, the people, the fan producers of lore videos on YouTube are amazing. There's some really, really good series and people do really, really in-depth stuff. And I think the funny thing to say is the GW product may be inferior to what's already out there for free. So that's going to be, just like with the animation, another motivation maybe for GW to cease and desist as many of those channels as possible. So this has become now, so just kind of a final note on this, this has become a target of the boycott, because they know they can't get people to stop buying the plastic crack. So they can just say, just don't subscribe to this, because this is a big win or lose thing for them. They're investing a lot into it. There has to be a lot of back end, a lot of infrastructure changes, a lot of investment to make this happen. So just don't subscribe to this. And that can be your comment to GW's legal behavior against the fan animators.
I don't know. I tend to think, yeah, okay, like we're in the dystopian age, right? Where everybody owns everything. I mean, like you've seen those infographic maps of where you're like, boycott Pepsi, and you're just like, okay, what part, right? And it's just this massive
Pepsi
thing. Like, I'm not saying that GW is that ubiquitous, but what I'm saying is I think boycotting just a part of what a company produces maybe not as effective as just boycotting the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of seems like, okay, if you don't like what GW is doing, how about, and you're going to boycott them and stop buying their stuff, kind of means you got to stop buying all of it, right?
Right.
Yeah, like, now I'm going to buy the miniatures. Oh, the most expensive part, right? The part that gives GW the most money,
right,
but you're not going to watch, or you're not going to subscribe to Warhammer Plus. That's going to work, right? That's my feeling there. Just,
yeah.
Like, it sucks. It's going to hurt if that's your hobby. It's kind of what a boycott is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nope, not doing it because I don't like your business practices. That's got to be everything.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, so we'll see how successful this is. And they're not going to share numbers, and they don't even have to. So we'll see. Maybe they'll just – and a lot of people are suspecting this is their move towards getting away from physical everything. but then just starting to license things out. If they can kind of step away and just hand over, you know, anything that's expensive and you have to deal with shipping containers and things, they're going to start trying to move away from that. And if they can be successful with delivering, selling licenses to producers and then producing digital content, maybe that's a thing. I don't know. And the one thing that on their financial report that I didn't mention we were talking about is they're making a huge move into China, I think this year. Okay. So they're localizing things in China. That's going to change the market. That's going to change the fan base tremendously. Mm-hmm. And it's going to change kind of their options. And with, I don't know how that's going to work with Brexit and things. So that may mean that everything that's produced for China will be produced in China.
Oh, maybe.
There will no longer be a UK product. So that's gonna make eBay go crazy because if there's all this cheap Chinese stuff then floating around.
I wonder what it would – all speculation here, but if they actually do move into China and then the stuff they're producing is in China, I wonder what effect that would have. I mean, it's surely they're going to have like standards, right? Like, GW would be like, okay – you have to produce it to like this quality of standard, because the last thing they want is like half injected sprues or pieces that don't fit or things that are just kind of crappy. But only based on what I know about World of Warcraft, and I've played like a couple days, I think the Night Elves or Blood Elves or whatever in World of Warcraft only came around because places like Korea, no one wants evil, or no one wants ugly evil. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing to back this up on other than that little anecdotal tidbit.
Right.
I wonder if part of their style change is because they were planning to move into China and... I'm not saying you have to completely adapt the aesthetic, but you got to make sure it's appealing to people everywhere. So maybe they did research and said, this doesn't sell well.
Right.
We got to kind of update the look so that it appeals to as many people as possible, especially this new market we have.
Mm-hmm.
No idea if that's true. Just something I thought about.
Yeah, no, but that's interesting. And it's a totally foreign aesthetic, a totally foreign customer sensibility. Mm. So yeah, and they have already started publishing. I think some books and terrain have been produced in China.
Okay.
So they've probably started that quite a few years back. They kind of started that process with the Necromunda and stuff. Mm. The terrain was all the Chinese produced. So we'll see what this brings. Hopefully for us, it'll bring good things because they're bailing on Japan, so we're getting screwed. Yeah. So if I can get stuff from China, I would much prefer that at a actual, not ridiculous price.
And speaking of aesthetic, I wonder how GW miniatures do here in Japan. And the only reason I wonder is because the last time I went to the actual local GW store, it's down in Denden Town, like the nerd paradise of Osaka, like sandwiched in between like two. Anyway, there's a lot of plastic anime titty down around Denden Town, right? Like that's what the figures are.
Right.
And you just walk and you're just like, oh my God, what the fuck am I looking at? Right. And they're like, hey, GW, right? I wonder how there's nothing like that.
Right.
In Warhammer or Age of Sigmar, right?
Right.
Like,
no, true.
There's nothing like that, right? There's not your classic little anime girls. And I wonder if, of course, for some people it's going to be like, I don't really care. I just like the game. Or I wonder if it's like, ooh, this is different and interesting. Mm-hmm. Or if it's like, I don't want to collect an army of armored dudes.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those niche markets, and GW realized that maybe a little too late because they've jacked the prices up to get as much as they can
and
pay for any sort of shipping and everything. I mean, the prices are absolutely insane. They've doubled in the last 5 years in Japan.
Mm.
It's just insane. I think it's niche, just like every kind of import, kind of foreign thing. There's some people that are like, oh, this is really different and I like it, but it's never going to be a small market. But the initial kind of, I think, launch in Japan got a lot of attention and then people kind of drifted away because that store was jumping the first first year that it was open. Games Workshop was crowded. Every table was full, the few that they had. And a lot of people were lining up for, pre-orders and stuff. It's not, I mean, and since the lockdown and stuff, it's been dampened. But I don't know. It's The company has decided, though, it's no longer worth translating things. Yeah. So that's not a good sign. Yeah. But let's put all that behind us finish our 100th episode. So where can people find you for the 100th time?
100th time, yeah. On Twitter, as always, that's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where an attempt to get my kid off my phone by developing an Angry Birds card game where you just count on stuff has turned into something completely different called Mathtronauts, which is very cute little vector-style stock animation, little cosmonauts. Collecting planets.
Oh, nice.
Now that I don't have the Angry Birds IP, I can actually develop it and potentially sell it, and that's kind of what I'm very cool. doing. Very cool. So if you like wading through massive Twitter threads with pictures, yeah, that's HiveMind.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
how about
that's great. So one thing I wanted to mention before me is the fourth printing of Dungeon Degenerates is now on Kickstarter. So I'll put a link in the description. So this is Dungeon Degenerates, The Hand of Doom. It's a great game, great art. You should definitely support Goblin Co. It's a great husband and wife, you know, team.
I like that.
Yes, and fun game, great underground kind of art style. They call it like, you know, kind of psychedelic aesthetic. Everything is kind of day glow, you know, rock poster colors. So yeah, so check that out. I'll put a link on Kickstarter.
When we play, can we like turn on like black lights?
We should. We definitely should. Yeah, I've got some, so we should definitely try that. And you can find me every week doing the Abuse Cartoons live stream. So on YouTube or Twitch, that's every Monday night, North American time, Abuse Cartoons. And then if you want to support what's going on here, the weekly, that's upturnedtable.com. And you can support us on Patreon by becoming a weakling at patreon.com/upturntable.
Still love that weakling.
So that is it. 100 shows in the bag.
Yeah. Hey, here's to 100 more.
100 more, hopefully. Yeah, so stick around. If you've only caught this most recent episode, we'll have 100 more for you coming up soon.
2 years time.
So thanks for joining us, and we will be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.